Welcome to another episode of Tea Time with Tara. I'm Tara. In this episode, I sat down with Adam Ross Nelson, a remarkable data scientist, author, and proud member of the LGBTQ plus community. Adam shares his personal journey of self-discovery, resilience, and empowerment. We'll explore how embracing our unique ways of thinking can lead to extraordinary achievements. So grab your favorite cup of tea, get cozy, and let's dive right in. Hi, Adam. Welcome to Tea Time.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
I'm so happy to have you. I am so excited for us to talk about everything. We just had like a little brainstorming session right before this to make sure that we touch on everything. So I'd like for you right up front to tell the audience a little bit about you and what you have going on.
So we're starting with the awkward part, right?
Yes.
Sure. Adam Ross Nelson, and thanks again for having me. I saw your show a while back, and I realized it would be a chance to talk about a lot of really interesting topics that I think come together. So for me, in my own perspective, so for me, that's learning disabilities, growing up as with learning disabilities, having learning disabilities as an adult, growing up LGBT. So for example, one of the stories we can probably talk a little bit more about later is when I was in elementary school, my elementary school principal told my family, my mom and dad, that I would be lucky to graduate high school.
Ugh.
Right? Yeah. Like, who says that? Like, yeah, what kind of principal says that? And now, well, actually, now I have a PhD in education.
Yes.
And, yeah, I know, right? So
take that.
Yeah. Victory lap. And one of the things, like, we know about education, one of like the clearest findings from education research is that student learning is most dependent on two things. It's teacher and principal effectiveness.
Oh.
Right. And so for me, the irony that a principal would say that to my parents now in hindsight, knowing the research about the value of principal effectiveness. Mm-hmm. So anyway, talk more about that. Interesting thing is, so even though I was like bad at school as a kid, pretty bad at math, it was really hard to do really simple addition and subtraction. Now I work as a data scientist of all things. So I saw you cringe a little bit.
Yeah. Numbers in me are not, I can memorize number sequences.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that's as far as it goes with math. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know why, but I'm just like, ugh. Yeah. My son's so good at it.
He's, oh, good.
Yeah. He's the ADHD kid that's good with math. So.
Okay. Well, there's, it's interesting because there's, you've probably know about dyslexia, right? Mm-hmm. Dyslexia is really well known.
Yep.
A reading disability. We could talk more about that too, but there's a similar one called dyscalculia.
Yes.
Yeah. And, dyscalculia is, a whole nother level. It's less well known, less well understood, I think. And it's not, folks with dyslexia, dyscalculia, learning disabilities, it's not like you have a diminished intellect. It's just that you think differently.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's me. That's me in a nutshell. Oh, I also forgot to mention, I have a book out.
Yes.
So yeah, I have a book coming out today. I'm sure by the time the show airs, or goes online, and it's called How to Become a Data Scientist, a Guide for Established Professionals. So specifically for mid and late career professionals who want to become a data scientist. And then this fall, look for me though, because this fall I have another book called Confident Data Science coming out as well. So
congratulations. This is so awesome. Look,
thank you so much.
Like, again, take that principle. Like,
yeah.
That guy.
So yeah. I mean, now for book writing, you have a lot of help. I mean, even without disabilities, you have a like there's a lot of editors. So I mean, I got to thank them and give them their credit. But I do like to write.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful. All right, so let's. Do you want to talk first? What do you want to talk about first? Because again, there are so many things for us to talk about. Do you want to just go right into what it was like for you growing up with your learning disabilities, or you tell me?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's talk. So, the thing for me, one of the things I've recently learned actually is that with dyslexia, it's some consider it a myth that dyslexia is all about letters backwards or words backwards.
So anyway, if you
do some reading on this on your own, you probably find some information that is newer from 10, 15, 20, or even 30 years ago. Now, in my experience, I think what that means is I think for a lot of people with dyslexia, it is you can have dyslexia not that might not necessarily be the main feature of how it manifests for you.
Okay.
For me, it was.
Okay.
For me, it really, really, really was. So, for example, like, could you imagine going through life not being able to know how to produce correctly the difference between a capital E and the number 3.
Yeah, that sounds frustrating.
Or lowercase b and lowercase d, lowercase p and q, very difficult for me.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that makes sense because they do look similar. And I have a 4-year-old who's learning how to write and is doing things upside down and backwards because that's how little brains work too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So like when they're learning, sometimes I didn't know that until my son started writing. And so, yeah.
Yeah. And so it makes writing and reading difficult. And then that makes math difficult enough. But then there's dyscalculia. And one of the key features of dyscalculia is having difficulty telling time. Especially working with analog clocks can be one of the key sort of difficulties for folks with dyscalculia. And I honestly didn't know how to read an analog clock until, I mean, I still have trouble reading analog clocks. If I'm looking at a clock and the numbers aren't clear and bold, like actually somewhere I saw, probably Etsy or something like that, I saw someone had a clock where they moved all the numbers around. Mm-hmm. So the 7 was where the 1 was supposed to be, and the 11 was by the 3 and the 4. Like someone was just being artsy and cute with clocks. Yeah. And it was my worst nightmare.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I don't have dyscalculia, and that sounds like a friggin' nightmare. Like, why would anybody do that?
Yeah, I don't know why. Somebody thought it was a cute idea, I guess. Maybe it was like, actually, I sort of thought about it, and I thought, okay, actually, I kind of like this clock now. After I spent some time thinking about it and got over my initial aversion, I was like, this kind of sends a message, too. This sends a message about how, like, we're overly focused on time maybe in our culture.
Okay.
And you know, like, so, I mean, that's a whole nother episode.
It's
maybe.
Art. It's
yeah,
art.
It's art. And it's all about, it's sort of anti-time art, which maybe there's a whole genre of anti-time art. Now I want to go look that up.
Right.
And see what other ways people have like, thrown the finger at, can I say that? Thrown the finger at time.
Oh, you can say all kinds of stuff, believe me. Unfortunately, sometimes I have a really filthy mouth, so.
So, like for me, I had all of that going on for all of these years. And then I finished high school, yay. Then I went to college, also yay, undergrad. And then I worked in education administration for a while. I also taught English for a while. So even with all of these difficulties, I taught English as a foreign language. I did that abroad. Actually, if you want to get better at a language, teach it. That's one thing.
That makes sense.
And then I worked in education administration for a while, higher education administration. And then I decided I wanted to work more in policy stuff. So I went to law school and then finished law school and then worked in, I worked in education for six more years after law school. And then one of my law professors reached out to me just, I don't know, out of the blue. Well, during that conversation, I said, hey, I was thinking about going back for a PhD. Would you be willing to support me as an advisor if I did that? And he said, yeah, sure. So I applied and went back for the PhD. And that's where I teched up to become a data scientist. So currently one of the most interesting things about me is I work as a career coach. So I help other mid and late career professionals. So I'm 42. Mm-hmm. So folks who are in their late 30s or throughout their 40s, really, or sometimes even later, transition their career into data science. So from teaching into data science, from marketing into data science, from academics into data science, sales into data science. Wow. You'd be surprised the number of people in sales, for example, mm-hmm. who are really good at data science, because one of the ways to get really good at sales, so I'm told, is to really understand analytics so you can really understand your customer, data analytics, okay, yeah, to understand your customer. Yeah, so some of the more data analytically savvy sales and marketing folk do awesome in data science because the skills are so transferable to understand
the
data.
Transferable skills. Mm-hmm. I'm learning all about that right now because I'm working on a career change. But we
You are?
Yeah, we can talk about that later, though.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, now I'm intrigued. I'm sure you'll talk about it more on the show, too.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've been like kind of dropping little pieces of it because I'm still trying to figure it out. But anyway, I did want to ask you because I'm thinking about how, you know, your principal said that you probably wouldn't graduate high school and then you went into school. So when did you get diagnosed?
Ooh, pretty young, probably. So diagnosed with ADHD in, I don't know, was that second grade, third grade? Very,
oh, wow.
For sure by third grade, because I remember taking medication for it.
Okay.
In third grade.
Okay.
So, yeah.
You know, it's interesting because I found so often that boys tend to get diagnosed earlier than girls. I mean, I am learning that there are so many women that around my age in their mid to late 30s who are just getting diagnosed. Like I was just kind of off topic, but it's about ADHD. I was just telling my son because we were talking about doing a creative type business together because he's 15 and is really ambitious and all Yeah, I'm so proud of him. He makes me so proud. So I was like, okay, well, this is, you know, where I'm at with this. I said, you know, the good thing is that I know people who have other skills. I said, but the one thing that I do have, aside from just the creative aspect of it, is that because I was undiagnosed with ADHD for so long, I have all of these project management skills in place because I was trying to compensate for all of that stuff that I didn't realize was my brain just working differently. So it was kind of like an aha moment in the car this morning with my son. Again, like diagnosed so early and so long ago. I mean, not to like say so long ago, but like I find that
it was in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah. Like, well, that's why I'm like, I don't mean like so long ago. But it's like there are these waves of like, okay, yes, we're gonna diagnose, and then no, we're very resistant to diagnosing. And it kind of goes back and forth where like my son didn't get diagnosed until he was, I want to say, 3 years ago, and he's 15, so 11 or 12.
Okay.
And even though by the age of 4, I was certain that that's what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's so different for everyone, right?
Yeah. Folks with learning disabilities are kind of like superheroes in that way because you have to develop these special powers, which scientists call mnemonic devices, right? Mm-hmm. And they're just coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
Like I'm trying to remember some of, I always forget what some of my, oh, I know. I relative because you know I figured out West and East relatively easy because of a really easy mnemonic. You just imagine W-E spells we.
Yeah, that's what I do too.
Yeah, you know. Now, although sometimes mnemonic devices backfire. So, for example, you know the one where you tell the difference between your left hand and your right hand. You hold out your thumbs, and the L makes the left hand. But as a dyslexic, I couldn't tell the difference. I didn't know which way the L was supposed to go. So my left hand and my right hand looked
It
just
said
like,
it didn't help.
yeah, that wasn't helping.
I'm teaching my daughter that one too, actually.
Yeah, it's great if you can draw an L. So I can't draw an L. So yeah, you have these coping mechanisms too, these superpowers that are so important. And I think everybody, well, I don't think, I know everybody has these new memory devices and coping mechanisms for tiny little faults that might not be diagnosed or might not even be diagnosable. It's how we get through life. It's how we get through life. I also, you know, a lot of the work I do in data science connects with something else you said. You were talking about how women tend to be diagnosed later or not diagnosed at all. And you know, that's a topic in data science because one of the things we do in data science is, well, one of the things responsible data scientists will do, or actually, I need to say that differently because I don't mean to imply that data scientists are an irresponsible crowd. But there is an important aspect of our work that involves undoing, or that can involve undoing the systems that lead to outcomes like the one that you just described, the one where women tend to be diagnosed later than men. Well, why is that? Because we have biases, we have systems, we have systems of oppression and systems of neglect that are just baked into the way society works. And one of the biggest aspects or components of data science is basically decoding in a way. I guess maybe that's not the best language right now. I'm having trouble being articulate, but decoding how those systems of oppression, those systems of neglect work so that we can create predictions, helpful predictions for people that aren't unduly influenced by the biases and the prejudices, like that one.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think about these things and I mean the fact that that's an actual job is just so cool, you know, like, because I'm always talking about, you know, well, again, to go back to my late diagnosis, everything was kind of like all of my issues were thrown under the umbrella of, well, she it has some sort of emotional stuff going on.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, and so that's it was like, oh, well, you know, issues at home kind of a thing. And oh, that must be what it is. And so my guidance counselor actually said that I should not go to college.
Really?
She didn't even have me take my SATs.
Oh, that's well. I same situation. I d wasn't told to do SATs and ACTs, but I think maybe for different reasons. Why? Tell me more about that. Like, what do you remember what the counselor said? What the reasoning was?
So I just remember that my mom was really pissed off about it afterwards.
Yeah.
But it was basically like, don't even waste your time kind of a thing. Like, don't even waste your
Don't
time. If you
even.
want to go to college, you can go to a community college where you don't need your SATs. So
None of
just,
this makes sense to me.
yeah.
This just, I got, so nobody explicitly came to me and said, don't take your ACT, don't take your SAT. I just got neglected out of it. Like, so there, and I made it to college by, well, okay, there's another thing going on sometimes called imposter syndrome. And I was about to say, I made it to college by luck and chance. I mean, there's other factors too, which are much more intrinsic. But anyway, I made it to college without an ACT score, which is an interesting story. You know whose story, believe it or not, I'm sorry to go political maybe a little bit, but you have your story you just told is almost identical to Michelle Obama's story.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
If you
should totally read
Gotta
or find. Yeah, find the summary of the book too if you're looking for a little bit of a shortcut, because there's so many books in the world. But everybody should buy mine. if you're interested in data science. No, she was, so her guidance counselor, her story is that in her book is she wanted to go to, oh God, where was it that she wanted to go to? I'm going to get the school wrong. A prestigious, well-recognized mm-hmm. school. And if I'm not mistaken, she had family who had been going there.
Okay.
And so she wanted to follow in her family's footsteps. But her guidance counselor said, no, that's probably too much. You should, there's a community school, college. Maybe you should think about that instead.
Mm.
And now look at Michelle Obama, First Lady of the United States.
Yeah.
She's killing it. Law professor.
Yeah.
I think law professor, right? Wasn't she law professor? Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
I need to double check that.
I wish I had a fact checker.
Yeah. I've learned not to give facts anymore because unless I like really, really need to, because this is like reality is hard.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You were saying you were having trouble being articulate before. And I was like, yeah, words are hard. Like, the amount of times where I'm just like, what is that word? What is that word? What is that word? Where I think I've learned recently that I think that's an ADHD thing. So again, being like, is that a fact?
I just pulled it up. She worked at Sidley and Austin. So for folks who aren't in the law world, that's a really prestigious law firm.
Okay.
And then also was assistant to the mayor as assistant commissioner of planning and development in Chicago.
Oh, good for her.
So anyway, her guidance counselor and your guidance counselor were hashtag wrong.
Yeah.
So was my principal. I think what's the moral of the story today so far? Like, don't listen to people who tell you you can't, because.
Yes, 100%. I mean, I still haven't finished college, actually. So because I became a mom, I was pregnant when I was 19, had a horrible, miserable pregnancy. And so I didn't get to finish school then. And so I am just chipping away at it. As a mom, it's kind of like whenever I can squeeze in a class. I made a whole career in science for the last 13 years.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Without the education behind it. It was
all fantastic.
Figuring it out on the fly. Every single job I would go into with some transferable skills, but mostly it was just having the confidence in the interview, if I could get in there, to be like, I can do this.
That's fantastic. It's all about, so the people who hired you were breaking down gates, right?
Yep.
Like, especially in science, there's so many gatekeepers. Oh, mm-hmm. You can't do this job without that degree. Or you can't do this task without that certification.
Yep.
And there's another in the world of data science for any folks who are data science or advanced or office people, like business analytics people in the community. There's a lot of shaming of Microsoft Excel and folks who build careers around Microsoft Excel. There are people who have, make no mistake about it, there are people who have built careers on Microsoft Excel. But a lot of folks like to shame it because well, there's a lot of reasons they try to shame it, which is all been so hogwash, basically. And all of that shaming of this tool or that tool or some other tool is a form of gatekeeping, which is like what you were what you have pushed through, apparently, it sounds.
Yes, to an extent, because now I'm kind of maxed out and I can't get like promoted up to like beyond a certain level because of my lack of formal education.
If you ever need help with math.
Well.
I was just going to say, if you ever need help with math or stats, give me a buzz.
Oh, heck yeah. I mean, I'm actually trying to finish a statistics class, so I'm going to keep that in mind.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it's my last general education class before I can go on to like all the concentrations for psychology.
Oh, okay. I get it. Psychology. Oh my gosh, that makes so much sense. Yeah. And it's science too, right?
Yes.
Psychology is a science. So
yes. Yeah, yeah. I love science. I'm obsessed. All like yeah. anything science related in any kind of science. I'm always like, mm-hmm. it's like magic sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like anyway, it's a whole different yeah. thing.
You know, actually I have a book recommendation for you because okay. you said you like, if you ever end up have to take another math class, or even if you don't have to take another math class, mm-hmm. A book that was really transformative for me is called Burn the Math Class.
Okay.
And I love it because it's kind of like that. Actually, it reminds me of that clock where like whoever made that clock was like throwing the finger at time.
Yeah.
So this person, I can't remember the author's name. He wrote this book called Burn the Math Class. And then the colon is Reinvent Mathematics for Yourself. And he literally walks you through calculus, just word for word, paragraph by paragraph, but without any of the calculus terms out. And like, he literally just reinvents math from the start. And even if you know calculus or think you know calculus, this yeah. is a good book because you'll learn it in a whole new way. And it's yeah. so readable. It's so, who knew this? Who knew a math book could actually be readable?
Yeah, that's impressive because
yeah.
the idea of reading a math book sounds very off-putting to me. But like, my son actually, it reminds me of the fact that like, there are certain ways like Common Core now in the schools where they're teaching things a certain way. And my son gets very frustrated because he can figure it all out in his head and doesn't need to write it all out. And he actually loses points. Even if he gets the right answer, it's like, but that's not how his brain works. And I'm constantly having to advocate for him and explain, like I'm in the middle right now of kind of giving a push with the school to provide him the support that he needs. Because mm-hmm. of the fact that, you know, he has a 504 plan and it's not helping because they are relying so heavily on executive functioning skills, which are, it's like, how can you possibly expect a child with ADHD to carry mm-hmm. around a piece of paper and remember that he has to go certain places at certain times based on that piece of paper? Like, hello?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's not how. That's
it's your
not
first
how.
Rodeo. Like, come mm-hmm. on.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Yep. You know, I think, you know, one of the things, okay, before anyone, if there's any teachers listening to the show or something like that, or principals, I want to point out that I think, and I know, because one of the things I do at some side work I do is I teach education law and special education law.
Okay.
And I work, and as a result of that, I work directly with teachers who yeah. really do care
yes.
and who really do a good job,
mm-hmm.
who are really smart, really well-trained, really effective.
Yeah.
And I think that's the majority of the education community.
I agree.
And you and I are talking about a couple situations where maybe, you know, also let's give the benefit of the doubt. Maybe my principal is having a bad day.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe his kid. Because he had a kid my age. I remember okay. this because maybe his kid, maybe that week did really bad and he was projecting, right?
Yeah.
He was like worried for his kid or something like that. I mean, I'm sure not that his kid did poorly in school. I mean, I don't even know where his kid is these days. So, you know, I don't want to give the wrong impression there.
Yeah,
either.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, to piggyback off of that, I know I actually dated a college professor and how much he cares about his students is like one of the most endearing qualities about him. And I mean, he's just a genuinely wonderfully kind person in the first place, but like seeing that, I admired that so much about him. And one of my son's teachers, it was the English teacher. He really gave a shit and like
nice
was so dedicated to supporting my son. However, and he would be like, I'm going to come to a lacrosse game. You let me know when they are. Like, he was so above and beyond.
That's really cool.
And then he became the principal like the next year. And I was like,
oh, that's
yes!
even better.
Because like, what a guy. What yeah. a guy. So
we
yeah.
could, We could almost do a whole show rehabilitating educators.
Yes.
Because actually, now you've sort of got me on a soapbox. The on, you know, social media is a mixed place, right? Mm-hmm. There's great things and bad things. I saw recently, and by recently, I think this was probably in the fall. I saw someone on Twitter. What someone had done is like they took a post from Twitter, screen captured it, and then posted it over on LinkedIn. And the post from Twitter was a teacher who was like asking for money to help buy school supplies. I know it was towards the beginning of the school year.
Okay.
And then the person who did the screen capture made this trash post about principals based on this teacher's tweet. And it said like, any principal who would force their teacher to go online to fundraise for school supplies is worst garbage human being in the world. And I put a stop to that because, and I wrote a direct message and I said, hey, I know you meant well here, but you painted with far too broad of brush strokes principals as the villain here. I know so many principals who are who haven't themselves been given the resources.
Yes, that's pass what I was thinking right off
teachers,
the bat.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. You know, and then so it's please don't just assume principals are being stingy. It's right. Not the principals, and we also can't assume the school boards are being stingy. Again, it goes back to the systems mm-hmm. of oppression and yep. neglect that we have in our society.
Yep.
That's the issue.
Yep. And so anyway, voting for budgets and mm-hmm. all those kinds of things. So yeah, it's mm-hmm. way more involved than people realize.
Yeah. Teachers, we went this whole direction that I wasn't even thinking about.
Yeah,
today.
Me neither.
This is a fun talk. This is a great talk.
That's why I'm like, we could probably just talk about anything, and here we are, just kind of like.
That's one of the great things about your podcast, though, is you just have such an open format that is open and inviting and welcoming.
Oh, thank you! I'm so glad, because that's really what I wanted to be. I want everybody to feel like we're just chilling. Mm-hmm. We're just chilling, and we're just talking about stuff. Yes, exactly. That's why I've always got my tea. All right, so. I totally took you off track here with that one one question. But so you were diagnosed early. You decided to go to college. So when you went to undergrad, was it something that you knew right at the end of high school that was the direction you wanted to go? Like, how was that whole thought process for you?
Well, for me, it's interesting. I didn't so much decide to go to college.
Okay.
Because after high school, so during high school, again, I was sort of in that system of neglect mm-hmm. that didn't land me in the ACT or the SAT prep or even to register to take the test. So I got lucky because in high school, I finagled a way, and this is a much more common now than it was in the 90s, but I finagled a way to take a class or two at a nearby college.
Mm.
So after high school, since I had already enrolled at that nearby college, I was able to stay on there for a semester right? And I basically slipped, and then later I transferred to another college. And then as a transfer student, I slipped through the admissions process at the new school, and I didn't need the ACT, the standardized test scores.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Which is good, because later I did, somewhere in there, I did take the standardized test scores because I remember seeing the test report. But I also remember seeing that the place for your standardized test scores on your college transcripts is mm-hmm. blank. So my school never got my scores somehow, or it's a while ago, but it's a good thing my school never got my scores, because my scores weren't so good, right? You know, I didn't test well,
yeah.
You know, and then actually, so when I was going to law school, here's, so anybody interested, ever aspiring for law school or just college in general or something that requires a test, but you're successful generally, I really had to explain my modest LSAT score to get into law school. And I said, hey, you know what, I know this LSAT score is modest, but if you look at my other standardized test scores for undergrad, and compare them with my grades in undergrad, there's a disconnect, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, I had to explain these test scores are not an indicator of how well I will do in class. There's no correlation. And that somehow got me into law school.
Made a case, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I made a case. Yeah. I gave a similar argument for the PhD program too, because mm-hmm. again, modest test scores. And the PhD so here's one of the things where I kind of got, there are spots where I count, where I do believe I was lucky and I'm not discounting my own skills and abilities. But mm-hmm. one of the ways I got lucky for the PhD program is my LSAT score was still new enough that I didn't have to retake the GRE. Mm-hmm. So the PhD program took my LSAT score as my standardized test score. So I guess I got lucky there.
Yeah. So you don't test well.
No, I don't test well. Oh, but deciding to go to college, we can stay on track too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I didn't so much decide to go to college. So I sort of ended up in college because I got back from teaching. So I took about a year off during high school and college, where I went abroad to teach English as a foreign language. As a high school graduate, I was teaching English in Budapest, Hungary. I still wonder how that even happened, but it did. I came back and it was like, well, I guess I should go to college now. And oh, I remember why I went abroad in the first place. I did apply to college and I applied to a college, a small private liberal arts college that was really expensive. And I got a fair bit of financial aid, Pell grants and things like mm-hmm. that too, but I still wasn't going to be able to afford it.
Yeah.
Without actually back then private loans weren't a thing.
Okay.
So like there was no way to afford this school. So sort of like as a temper tantrum, like a 19 year old temper tantrum, I was like, well, I'm going to Europe. And I went to Europe and people were like, well, how are you going to do that? And I was like, well, there's a lot of articles actually back in the 90s for people who read New Yorker or Harper's, which I would go to the library and read because, I mean, my family didn't have those magazines. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I'd find them at the library. There was a lot of articles and also a lot of advertisements about people, Americans teaching abroad, which is also loaded with privilege that Americans can just go anywhere and teach English. Right. But anyway, in the late 90s, I went abroad to teach English as a temper tantrum because I couldn't afford college. And then when I came back, I ended up picking a University of Wisconsin school, a state school, really good school, University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire, where I studied history and originally was going to study history and computer science. And then I switched that to history and public communication. And in hindsight, some days I wish I had stuck with computer science because now I write computer code all day as a data scientist. Fun fact, University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire is also the alma mater of Chasen Buttigieg, husband of Pete Buttigieg.
Wow. And,
yeah, I know, right? So Chasen's quite a bit younger than me. I mean, he was there, I think, in the late 2000s, and I finished in spring of 2003.
Okay.
But when Pete was running, all the UW-Eau Claire Blue Gold community were like, hey, we're going to have an alumni event at the White House. hosted by the First Gentleman.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would have happened at all or not. So if you're listening, Pete and Chasen, no pressure.
No big deal.
Yeah, no big deal. No big deal.
I love that it just kind of like you figured it out, though. And that's the thing that you were talking about, those superpowers that people with these learning disabilities have, that we're like, we figure that shit out.
Yep.
Specifically because the world is so much more difficult for us to navigate, so that imposter syndrome happens. But like, it's like, nope, I'm not gonna, I believe in myself. I have to do this.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, not that I bullshit my way through things, but like I have definitely semi-bullshitted my way into things and then been like, oh my God, what am I doing? And then I figured it out.
Figured out. So, you deliver.
Yes.
Yeah.
100 million percent every time. So it's just.
Yeah. And for me, maybe you have a similar experience too. I mean, I can, point to people who have been there to help me along the way. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, my mom was severely, severely physically disabled.
Okay.
Wasn't able to take me to college. And my dad at the time lived a really, really, really long ways away and wasn't able to take me to college. So I started college a year late by comparison to my high school classmates. So a very good friend of mine, Paul, had been, by the time I started college in earnest at UW-Eau Claire, he had already done a year of college at St. Olaf. So he was like college pro, like he had a whole year of college. So he was a pro, right?
Yeah. You know? I mean, in comparison to you, right?
Perspective in your late teens is a whole different thing. So I was like getting ready to go to Eau Claire. I remember for admitted students weekend where you had to go for orientation. Eau Claire is about 30, 40 miles from here. So to go to the admitted students weekend, I actually had to like bike from Menominee to Eau Claire. So about a 2-hour bike ride to like go bike to admitted students weekend. And I tried to convince the school, talk about like gates and systems of oppression and neglect. I was like, hey, I have a special circumstance. I don't have a car. I don't have a family to help me get where I'm get there. I can't, is there a way I could, back then you, I didn't even ask for remote because back in the 90s, what was Zoom.
Right.
But anyway, and they were like, nope, you have to come to campus. So I was like, okay, I'll bike. I biked to campus and I was there. Actually, I loved it. I mean, I was glad for the opportunity to be on campus for the day. But then to get my, I can't bike my dorm room to campus. So my friend Paul, and I was living with my grandma at the time, actually, and she didn't feel comfortable taking me to campus. So that wasn't an option. So Paul had this vintage purple Volkswagen Beetle, where we literally just threw, I had like these duffel bags. I just had my duffel bags. That's it. I guess I had a computer too back then. Somehow I managed to have a computer. So anyway, my computer, me and Paul and my duffel bags, driving to Eau Claire, and it's a 2-hour bike ride, but it's like a 90-minute drive or a 30-minute drive.
Okay.
So he's like there with me as like everybody else has their parents with them and siblings go like checking in the residence hall to get their keys and whatever. But there I have my friend Paul. And they keep asking him, oh, hey, what's your name? Are you here to check in? Welcome to campus. And they're like, he's like, no, I'm just with my friend Adam. And then my roommate, actually, this is fun too. So my roommate, this is totally off topic, but it's a fun story. My roommate didn't show up for college that first semester. So Paul was there and his school didn't start for like another week or two. So he was like, can I just like stay with you here for a while?
And then, oh, I love that.
Yeah. And like, so one night turned into like 2 or 3 nights. And then eventually our hometown was only by car, like 30 minutes away. Mm-hmm. So like the next day he must've like come back to Menominee, got some clothes for a few days. And then he spent like the first 2 weeks of college with me.
I love that.
And you know how like there's all these like first year student orientations and parties and stuff at like a traditional residential school.
Yeah.
He was participating. He was living the blue gold life. And then eventually he had to go over to St. Olaf and he disappeared and everybody started asking, I guess I know who people really liked. They liked him because they kept asking, where's Paul? And I was like, oh, he had to go to college. And they're like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, he doesn't go here. they're like, he doesn't? And I thought he was your roommate.
That's hilarious.
So he disappeared. And then by then, you know, I mean, I guess I also had my own room for the first semester as well. So
yeah, that's nice.
Cool.
Yeah. I love that. That's a great story, though.
Yeah, I love that story. So by just being, you know, of course, there were intrinsic skills and abilities that I brought to the table here, but there were other people there to help me out. A little bit of luck, being in the right place at the right time with the right kind of preparation is how, is probably how everybody gets through life. But if you have learning disabilities, you're really leaning on, a lot of the times you're leaning on other people in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And you're really, really counting on being prepared with those mnemonics and then being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera. And then like for you and your kid, You're there to basically knock some heads at the school and be like, hey, just because my kid has the right answer, just because he didn't follow your steps doesn't mean he should be marked down. In fact, right. maybe he should be marked ahead because he found a whole new way to solve the
yes,
problem.
Yes, exactly. And that's why I'm so amazed by him all the time, because he's just so smart and he doesn't let this shit hold him back. Mm-hmm. And he is like, I don't understand. I figured out a better way to do it. I'm like, you did. Good job. Like, yep. Can you do it that way? And he's like, no, I don't understand. I figured it out this way and I can't mm-hmm. do it that way. So I'm like, all right.
You know? Might like the book I mentioned, Burn
Oh
the Math
yeah.
Class.
I was totally thinking that, because I'm like, what better type of book for him to read than this, because mm-hmm. of the way that his mind works. And that's the thing. I mean, we are similar in a lot of ways. So I can support him in some ways, but in other ways, I'm like, I don't know, like math, for example, I'm no good at that, but there are other people in our lives who can support him. And his least favorite subject happens to be literature, English. Mm-hmm. And that's my favorite. So uh-huh. I'm like, okay, anything you need in that department, I can help you. Anything with history, my ex-husband loves history. So like,
oh, that's fantastic.
We have all these people kind of plugged in that can support him however he needs. And then the same thing for me in my career. There were definitely people who they were like, they believed in me just enough, you know, mm-hmm. to say, okay, I'm going to take this extra time and really show you how to do this, all throughout my whole career, because I could not have made it as far as I have without those people, specifically because I needed people to believe in me when mm-hmm. I was bullshitting my way into something. Mm-hmm. Other people and having people to support you matters so much, not just in school and your career, in life in general. It matters so mm-hmm. friggin' much, especially yeah. for people like us.
Yeah.
With different
other people to support you, and then also making sure you give yourself the credit that you deserve. Because it can be tempting to attribute all of your success to luck or to other people when yeah. really it's a mix. Yeah. It's a mix.
Yep, totally. Yeah. I agree with that.
Exactly.
I've caught myself saying, yeah, by luck or whatever. And then I'm like, actually, no, it wasn't completely by luck because I did this. So mm-hmm. it's hard to give yourself that credit, but it's so true. And yeah. it is important.
Yeah, I used to say that a lot when I was in the middle of the PhD program. And for anyone who doesn't know much about PhD programs, you can generally develop a really close relationship with your advisor, your primary advisor. And she, in my case, constantly reminded me, hey, you did this. Mm-hmm. This was your effort. This was your idea. These are your ideas. These are your accomplishments. And I keep saying, but you helped me find this shortcut. And she's like, no, you found the shortcut. I mean, I helped you do the paperwork maybe, but right. you know,
yeah.
So yeah, she was really good about that for me.
I love that. Yeah. Those kinds of people are so important.
I mean, I'm very thankful for a chance to have been on your show, and I'm going to keep listening, and I'm so glad you let me plug my books.
Of course. Yeah. So plug them again. Those books, what are the titles and what are they about?
Well, actually, the first one that we really connects with a lot of what we spoke about is breaking down those barriers, breaking down those gates. It's How to Become a Data Scientist,
okay.
A Guide for Established Professionals. So it really talks about breaking down those barriers and breaking down those gates and getting past those gatekeepers. And in fact, I even write in the book about how my role is not as a gatekeeper. The book mm-hmm. doesn't say you need to do this, 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 and this to become a data scientist. It says you can become a data scientist and here's 10 different paths, or here's 20 different paths, or here's how you can build your own path. That might be mm-hmm. a better way to put it. Think about
yeah.
it. So How to Become a Data Scientist. You can buy it pretty much anywhere books are sold, Amazon, Barnes and Noble. There's hardcovers, awesome. Paper, there's audio, no, not audio, ebook, Kindle.
Okay.
And then that one actually is available as of April 12. And then in late September, another book called Confident Data Science. And that book is really a skills book. It's a tour of data science. It's you basically learn. It's not comprehensive. No single book could ever teach you comprehensively how to be a data scientist.
Yeah.
But if you are on the data science learning journey, or if you're at an organization where you are expected or could benefit from learning about data science, the Confident Data Science book would be a really good book for you. I have an entire chapter on ethics and culture. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I did, we talked about this week or today, one of the things I spoke about in the book at length is ethics, like ethics, okay. ethics. Maybe that's another episode. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I was going to say,
yeah, data ethics. I did an experiment recently. So I have a lot of data books, as you might imagine. I grabbed 10 of them. I've tried to find a good representation of older, newer, et cetera. And I checked the indexes and the glossaries for references to ethics. Out of 10 books, 2 had reference to ethics. Yeah.
Wow. So
I did that a while ago. And then when I started writing books in data science, I said, one of my contributions to the field can be, okay, we're going to double and triple and quadruple down on ethics, which is something I feel good about anyway.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a real opportunity to be more vocal about ethics in the field.
Mm-hmm, 100%. All right. Well, with that, my last question for you, what do you want to leave the listeners with? If there's one thing that they could take away from this entire episode, what would that one thing be?
Ooh, my one thing would be I think probably a really good summary and also sort of this really inspirational look back takeaway would be everybody's brain works differently. Mm-hmm. I think that touches on pretty much everything we've covered. And knowing that is really empowering because just because your brain isn't working the way other people expect your brain to work doesn't mean your brain isn't working well.
Right.
Right. So give yourself the credit that you deserve. And if for some reason you're doubting yourself, find others who will help you identify how and why you really are special and important and powerful and strong and smart, etc.
All the things. Thank you. Very well put.
Thank you.
That concludes this episode of Tea Time with Tara. I really enjoyed that conversation. I feel like Adam is another person that I could probably talk to about pretty much anything. We had really wanted to do an episode for Pride Month, but because I had to put the podcast on the back burner for a little while, it works out that I'm releasing his episode for Pride Month. So please make sure to check out his book. I will probably be having him on the show, hopefully, maybe around when his second book comes out. So stay tuned for that. Also, be on the lookout for upcoming guest appearances. If you haven't listened already to the episode of Everyday Dialogue, where I speak with Fabian Morgan about having ADHD and being a parent to children with ADHD, please make sure you check that out. I absolutely love Fabian's whole podcast, not just because I was on it, but because he just really keeps it real. He asks really thoughtful questions, and he's just all around a really, really cool person to talk to. He is also going to be a guest on the pod soon. I have already recorded that episode. I was hoping to have it released by the end of Pride Month because he is another member of the LGBTQ community, but we'll see. I don't want to make any promises. I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver because that is a bad habit of mine that I mean well, I really do, but I want people to feel like I am reliable. And so if it is a pleasant surprise, that's a whole lot better than letting you guys down. I do want to take a moment to extend my heartfelt gratitude to Adam for joining me and sharing his journey. Remember that it is important to celebrate and uplift the voices within the LGBTQ plus community, not just during Pride Month, but every day. By fostering empathy and understanding, we create a world that embraces diversity and empowers every individual to be their authentic selves. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe to Tea Time with Tara wherever you listen to or watch podcasts, and share this episode with your friends and loved ones. Together, we can spread awareness and promote a more inclusive society. As always, I want to hear your thoughts, suggestions, and personal stories, so please connect with me on Instagram at teatime.with.tara or through my website, teatimewithtara.com. Let's continue to change the world one conversation at a time. Until next time.